The first part of this
passage, which
is being read in two, follows on very much from the first part of Matthew chapter 15. In that part, Jesus has been talking to the Pharisees and the scribes who have journeyed all the way from Jerusalem up to the northwestern shore of Lake Galilee, if we are to take this story as written, all the way to Gennesaret, where Jesus has, in the previous chapter, firstly fed 5,000 people and then walked on water to meet his disciples on the shore of Galilee at Gennesaret. The scribes and Pharisees have come to ask Jesus some questions. It seems as though they are hearing about this prophet from the north who is saying things which are challenging, things which might be, well, not quite some of the usual teachings, and that he and his followers have also been doing things which would be seen to be not strictly good and proper and right to do. Whether this is all hearsay or whether some of them have heard him speak, whether they have seen him when he might have been down in the Jerusalem area, all of those are possibilities. But they've come to challenge him. And at the beginning of chapter 15, they begin by challenging him, saying, "Your disciples don't wash their hands properly before eating." Jesus' answer to them in that first bit is pretty much saying, "What a petty question to ask, when you yourselves, as teachers of the law, manipulate the law so that you can deny the commandments, especially the one," he says, "of honouring your father and mother, by declaring that you can keep this wealth for it for God, and so you do not have to share it to care and look after for your parents." How petty is hand washing compared, is almost Jesus' challenge, to you who do not honour your father and your mother. So Jesus is kind of challenging these leaders of the faith, and he carries this on in this next bit where he starts talking about food laws. For all of these laws are ways in which people are able to mark themselves out as either being a person who's in or them who are out. Acceptable, unacceptable. We see that with food laws being continued in the story of the early communities that gather following Jesus. As Paul struggles at times to work out whether or not it is right to eat food which is not pure in those terms. And there comes an argument in the early church about whether or not people who are new to Christianity, who've come from a Gentile background, have then got to start obeying all the Jewish laws, the traditional Jewish laws of cleanliness, of food, and all of those things, before they can become properly followers of Jesus. And in the end, they come to a compromise, because I'd like to say we're good at compromises. We're not, but we just make them time and time again. And the compromise is, "Well, we'd like you to try and refrain from this, and we think you ought to do this, but actually we're not going to make it essential." So there are these conversations about who is in and who is out. And those conversations are still taking place as Matthew writes this story. Whether the story are, well, and probably do have some basis in actual fact, there is this challenge that is made to Jesus. Who are you to come and challenge our ways which have been set for years and years? Who are you? And Jesus says, well, doesn't it make some common sense that actually what's far worse is the way that we treat other people than whether we wash our hands or whether we eat the right food? What do you think God looks at? Do you think God looks at the people who have to eat this because that's all there is that they're able to eat, but who actually are kind to their neighbour, who share their food with those who have none, rather than someone who says, oh, I can only eat this and that's all I'm going to eat, and I'm going to fast and paint my face white to make it show that I'm doing all of this good heavenly spiritual stuff while ignoring the needs of neighbours, of people who I meet day by day? What, says Jesus, is the motivation of your heart? What's the motivation of your heart? Because it's that that tells you whether you are someone who is following the ways of God, being godly, being Christ-like. Are you someone who slanders others, who abuses them by your words, by their deeds? Are you someone who kind of treats others as if they are unworthy, not wanted, that they should be excluded, that they should be banned or barred in whatever way? Now, I don't think we should take this as saying that Jesus said that hand washing is not good. So I'm not saying to you, don't go away and wash your hands before you eat. In fact, had Jesus probably known about all that we know now about germs, he might have had a different way of saying some of that he said. I mean, it was Democritus who'd proposed something similar to hand washing some 400 years earlier. And it wasn't until really the 19th century that we realized that sense of need for that kind of hygiene for ourselves, that it did help us protect ourselves. But that's not the point that Jesus is about here. He's just saying, what is in your heart? Who is in and who is out? And how are you going to decide that? And which would you rather be in? Would you rather be in a group of people who have OCD about hand washing, or a group of people who help one another face life and journey through life, who are there when someone's in need, who are people who are encouraging, looking for the best for you, looking for people's well-being? Which would you rather be in? I think Jesus tells us quite clearly which he'd rather be in. And rather than a challenge to those old traditions, it seems to me it's about saying, what is God's mind in this? Not what is the human interpretation of these ways, of these laws, of what we think God is about, but what would God's way be? And if we center that in our thinking, then maybe as we continue to wash our hands, we will also continue to serve and to love one another with divine love. We're going to sing about that kind of mind that we need to have. We're going to sing, may the mind of Christ my Saviour live in me from day to day. So the story has now moved. It's moved now from Galilee to Tyre and Sidon. Tyre and Sidon is a place of economic exploitation. The Galilean farmers produced crops, and the crops that they grew were traded through ports like Tyre and Sidon to other places. In that place, merchants grow rich. They grow rich on the work of those who are ordered to work for them, the labour of those we might call peasants, those who work for little wages. Jesus moves into this space that is controlled by people who benefit from Galilean poverty. And in this space, he then encounters this person, a woman, who represents marginalization in every form. Not least, she's a woman. Not least, she's not an Israelite. In fact, Matthew calls her a Canaanite. Maybe just interesting for us to note that Mark, who we presume Matthew has gathered most of this story from, does not use the term Canaanite. He uses Syrophoenician. The term Canaanite went out as a political kind of term used around 1200 BCE. It had been used as a kind of term for an area covered by what we might call the Levant or all around that area, and it was being replaced by words like Israelites, Philistines, so more tribal names rather than this more general classification of Canaanites. But Matthew chooses it very carefully. And he chooses it carefully because it points to an ancient enmity that is there. That when Israel comes from out of its exodus into the land of Cana, Cana which is inhabited by other people, Cana which they think is theirs to take over because it's been promised to them by God. And so Canaanites becomes this term of, if you like, hatred, general thing, the old enemy. This is what we are still facing. This woman is not merely an outsider, she's a hated outsider. Barely put up with. And this is the woman who comes out and who seeks Jesus. And she asks him for help. I'm sure you will have heard many opposing sermons on whether Jesus was testing her, Jesus was just waiting to see what she might do, or Jesus changed and challenged by her words. In actual fact, in verse 23, the words that are used to say in the reading that we had it as, send her away, come from the Greek term apolluson. And that term can also be translated as loose them, with the sense maybe of not sending away, but of releasing what was there. The demon that was holding her daughter in captivity, if you like. Were the disciples calling on Jesus? The disciples who'd seen so many wonderful things, who'd seen his healing miracles as well as his feeding the 5,000 and the walking on the water. Were his disciples saying, surely, you know, do this? Although perhaps their motive was more a case of, because we don't want a following nagging at us and shouting at us all the time. Just for goodness sake, do it. We don't know. Our translations use the term send her away, as if she's to be put aside, ignored. But the woman is persistent. She comes back. And she says, yes, you might have been sent to the lost sheep of Israel. Maybe she should have said, maybe that's what you think. But actually, the others of us around here, we too are in this place. In this place of economic exploitation, even me, who's a hated outsider, even I have a place in this society. And even I, in some way, need to be cared for or find a means of survival in this place, in this society. Even I will eat the crumbs that come from your tables. Even I, as the most marginalized, will eat the crumbs that those who are even poverty will not eat, because at least they're not of the hated race. But even they're eating only the crumbs from the table of those who are getting rich on the back of exploited labor. She challenges everything in this system. She challenges the way that Israel consistently tries to build walls around itself, walls around its communities, the way we still see it today. We see it in the way that they push others to the side, not caring for their needs, as they push them out of their homes in Gaza and in the West Bank. How they cut off the water and electricity so that there are even no crumbs coming. We talk a lot about the prophets and their calls for justice. Richard Rohr, in his meditation this morning, spoke of prophets, and he said, let me just see where I found it. Oh, I can't see it written there. But he talks about prophets as being the people who stand up and tell the truth about the situation that people are in. That they're not fortune tellers, but that they highlight situations as they are and ask the questions of how should we be. This woman, Syrophoenician, Canaanite, whoever, this person is a prophet who helps Jesus see what is the truth. Well, that's how we could read this story. That Jesus chooses, having been confronted by the situation, is challenged by it, and in searching himself, sees what right is, sees what justice is, sees what the truth is, and says, yeah, you're right. Whoever you are, you deserve justice. Whoever you are worthy. You are part of God's love and God's kingdom. This woman sets him again on that path of understanding that. Of course, if Jesus was a politician, he'd be being thrown all sorts of abuse by now by all other members of all other opposition parties for doing a U-turn. There's wisdom in U-turns, isn't there, when you actually, rather than following the wrong decision you've made until its ultimate conclusion, you have the wisdom to stand up and say, yeah, I got that wrong, and there is a better way. It's a wisdom that at times we show in the church and in here in our Methodist church as we spoke through the God in Love Unites Us report, as we welcome the same-sex kind of marriage of couples, as we welcome people into our communities, not based on whether they keep the Jewish or the Christian traditional rules, but whether they are people who are encompassed by that awesome love of God, which is for all people in all places and in all time. I like the idea that Jesus learns about exclusion from someone who's excluded. That he doesn't turn away from this excluded person and say, I have nothing to learn from you. But hears, is challenged, and learns, and changes. And it seems to me that still is the call for us in our churches today. For us to ask, who are the people who are our Canaanites? Who are our people who are excluded, marginalized in all sorts of ways? Who are these people that we need to listen to and learn from, rather than merely shutting the door in their faces? We need to keep learning, to keep being open to these new pictures that we might have. Just as that has been the story of God's people from the very beginning of time, as they come up with images and pictures of God and change and change and change and change as they open themselves to new understanding, open themselves to new thinking, open themselves to the work of God, that divine love, working within our hearts, within our souls, within our minds, that we too may be transformed, just as Jesus transforms himself through his life to that place where we truly call him the Christ, the Anointed One, the one who's shown us the way, the truth, and the life. May our minds be open, and may our hearts be full of love. Amen.